This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three-man front.
Wisconsin, they got problems. As good as they look, they got problems. Graham Mertz, he tests positive for COVID. His backup then tests positive for COVID. Cone's already out with a foot injury, out indefinitely. So now Wisconsin's going to have to go to their fourth-string quarterback for possibly 3 weeks. That ain't
good. This is kind of what we talked about with the Big Ten, that if you get hit, that it's going to hit harder than it will in most other conferences. And when you've already had one of your quarterbacks go out, not related to COVID, and then you have your starter and a couple backups get hit with COVID, there's going to be some issues. Now, we sort of mentioned this yesterday. If there is, I guess, a bit of silver lining with this, if there is a part of this that is not completely negative or detrimental, or that just makes you think that Wisconsin's season is over, it's their next few games. You know, I think you look at Nebraska, and you know, we're gonna have a talk with Jeremiah Searles here in about 25 minutes about Nebraska and just what he really thinks of them this year. Purdue's a team that I think Wisconsin, with a backup quarterback, that defense, that O-line, the tight ends, the backs, I think they could potentially go win that game. But then you get to November 14th, and you're at Michigan. And Michigan looks like they might be a different football team. So, and that's one that you probably wouldn't have those guys back for. I think it'd be close. I don't know exactly what day you would have those guys back. And then when I say back, like available for game, sure. But are they back on Monday for practice that week? That's the question that you have to ask. And that's when it literally becomes a matter of what day are they available back to the team. So, yeah, Wisconsin's probably in some trouble. I think they can still win their next two regardless. I mean, even if you go out there and you just have two dogfights, 10-7 and 14-7, and you get a couple turnovers, you find a way to win, you dominate on the ground, just some old-school 1992 Alabama football, and you win those two, and then you can get a guy back for the Michigan game. You're fine. Committee's not going to look down on that. You're good. You're fine. So I think that's your target date, and that's what you really begin to prepare for kind of behind the scenes. You're not forward-facing. You're not saying, well, we've figured out a quarterback situation for Michigan mid-November, but you know you got some guys working on it in the background that are starting to get you ready for, okay, how are we going to look for that game, because that one's going to be different.
Well, it's time to get back to playing Wisconsin football. You threw it, what, 21, 22 times the other night in your opener versus Illinois? It's like you just said, man, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Just line up, hand the ball off. Throw five passes a game, but make them be effective passes. So that news out of the Big Ten, lots to get to in the SEC. Florida finally back to the practice field after 2 weeks. What does that mean coming up this weekend? Because they host the Missouri Tigers. On paper, we looked at this game and we had chalked it up as a win. Missouri, one of those surprise teams in the Southeastern Conference. I think everyone would agree. And it looks to be one of the teams that's actually getting better each week. Now, you can say what you want about the game with Tennessee. In retrospect, I think they actually played okay against Alabama, all things considered. But you look at the two wins that they've had and how they looked this past weekend. Missouri, maybe that team. Maybe they play spoiler there in the East.
I think the big difference in this game is what you saw from Larry Roundtree last week. They go for, let's just look at the rushing numbers for Missouri on the season. Now, granted, Alabama was week one, 69, 126, 180, 220. Feels like they're sort of finding the run game a little bit, getting a little bit of feel for how things are going to work out, maybe who they can rely on, who they can depend on. Same thing with Roundtree, 67, 84, 119, 126, two touchdowns last week against Kentucky, a pretty good Kentucky front. Now, granted, that front seven's beat up a little bit. Quentin Bohanna's out. Pascal's had a knee injury. He's still playing, but he's obviously not 100%. But still, behind a freshman quarterback, I mean, we talked about this with LSU last week. The one thing that I want with a freshman quarterback is a running game. Well, LSU got it last week. Ayra Gilbert was great in blocking. I mean, he really helped him out in the run game. Ed Ingram was phenomenal. That offensive line looked good. All of a sudden, LSU gets the run going. Well, guess what? Freshman quarterback looks pretty good. Missouri gets this run game going. I mean, Basics already look good really without the run game. They get the run game going, they're going to be dangerous. And by the way, Florida hadn't tackled anybody all year. I don't know what makes people think that all of a sudden they're going to tackle after a couple weeks off. So that's a dangerous, dangerous game. Now, defensively, I like the front seven for Missouri. They're an attacking front seven, which I think actually really helped them against Kentucky because Kentucky runs a lot of gap scheme stuff, a lot of read stuff, some slow developing plays. Well, when you get north and south against that, you have a chance to be very disruptive. When you look at this Florida team, I don't really think Florida really even cares about running the ball. I mean, I know they're going to try and they're going to do some things, but the emphasis isn't really there for that. They're going to hit you with more quick throws, which can just act as a run game for them. So Nick Bolton and company out in space are going to have to be really good, especially on the short stuff and the quick stuff. And I don't know if they have really a matchup for Kyle Pitts. Not many teams do, but they're active enough up front to be problematic. I think they can get some hits on Kyle Trask, and that could make a big difference. I think it's a dangerous game for Florida. I really do.
From Fred Ridley, who's the chairman of Augusta National, he announces that the 2020 Masters Tournament, and it's going to be scheduled, of course, for November this year because of COVID, we're going to get ESPN's College Game Day airing live from Augusta National. Now, with their relationship, Cole, that obviously they have with CBS and ESPN, with it kind of being the CBS game, I would have thought that maybe CBS would have had a problem with it. But I guess if you're CBS, you really don't have an option. Or does this help you if you're CBS, getting that lead in with that broadcast and people will switch over?
Well, I think the main reason that you're doing it, number one, is you have the Masters on a college football Saturday, so that's big. But you have a massive game in the state of Georgia as well. So, I mean, I think that that's probably one of the reasons that they were allowed to do it. I understand the CBS relationship, but this is a way to product, and they still want a lot of the ratings. And think about it. If you're Augusta, you want to try to pull people away from you. I think this is a way to do it, is just to remind all college football fans, usually go straight to college football game they can find. Hey, Masters going to be on too. Don't forget about us.
But what a cool setting that's going to be. They're going to actually be overlooking the pond there on the par 3 course on hole number 9. But that was announced and some other aspects of what they're doing. But when you think about all of the cool things that could have happened, and I still can't believe that it's going to happen. But yeah, we're going to get that coverage, ESPN College Game Day there. Something tells me that how many people are going to be clamoring to try to go? I know that they're limited on how many people they carry, Cole, to ESPN's College Game Day, but how many guys are going to be, hey, let me go? Or do we get everybody there on the set? Because everybody's actually been invited, according to this news release, but you wonder if Corso is going to be able to be there and some of the others, but it's going to be really, really cool.
That's going to be really cool. And I think, too, just the crossover capabilities that you're going to have that day are going to be pretty special. I mean, you just imagine some of the shots that you're going to get, you know, coming back and of the course. And obviously the setup, like you mentioned, they'll be over on the par 3 course, which obviously not going to be in use for, you know, the tournament that day. But still, just to be able to get some of those shots, to be able to have, I'm sure, access to different parts of the course that we don't normally get to see. It's going to be fun to watch. You say you can't believe it. Is that more from you're surprised that Augusta wasn't part of this for you?
Yeah, I think it is, man. I didn't think that Augusta National, it's kind of, look, these are our rules. This is how we're going to play the game. You don't like it, then don't play. And that's kind of the stance that you get and the tradition there. I mean, it certainly makes sense. And when we got the news that it was going to be in November and started looking at the slate of college football games we were going to get, we said, hey, how cool would that be? Or how do they do this? And I just can't believe that they're doing it. I'm certainly glad they're doing it. I think it's so awesome. But I guess that's what surprised me, is that Augusta National said yeah, and they were open to it.
Yeah, and they there is more of a feel there that usually they do things because they want to, not because they need to or they have to. And think about it. There's a lot of crossover with golf and college football. Most of those golfers are huge college football fans. And they're into it, and they want to be a part of it. And this is just a way to sort of help everybody continue to to have that crossover, be able to show their fandom, be able to still be involved with college football, even though they're going to be playing in maybe the most important tournament of the year.
Well, and where it falls on the calendar, in being in the middle of a college football Saturday and not being in April, when that week that we look at, and oh, it's Masters week, you know, I get excited for that. But just reminding, just even your average casual viewer for golf, that the Masters is actually still taking place, because we've had this massive influx of events. And to be honest, it's kind of hard to keep up with some of the stuff that we've had going on, and the different dates and the times that have been moved around, you know, multiple days. I don't know. It's just really cool for college football. And you think about all the guests that they're going to probably have stopping by. Do you have one guest picker? Do you have maybe, you know, five guys that have green jackets, that have won green jackets? Do you have them all on there? I mean, if you got to go, where do you go? Tiger Woods?
Well, I don't know. Here's the interesting part of that is where are some of those players going to – it would probably be hard to schedule, because where are they going to be as far as their round is concerned? I know it doesn't start necessarily right then because the cut's been made, so you'll start later in the day. But still, I would imagine that they would probably try to bump that Saturday round up a little bit to be able to roll in to that college football game. But are those guys going to be able to come over there to do that if they know they're getting ready to play a competitive round at Augusta National, especially if you're in contention? I mean, I don't know. That changes it a little bit. For me, if you're asking, is there one guy? It's Nicholas. I mean, I don't know like why you even pretend to go another direction, but I don't think Tiger's ever done it. And if you had a chance to get him, especially on site there, I don't know how you pass that one up either. I'm more interested in just what your day is going to look like on that day, because now it's just, I mean, this has gone to a completely different level. I mean, you're going to have to be dialed into this. You're going to have to watch all college game day that day, and then yep. You're going to have a competitive round of the Masters tournament, and you're going to have a big day of college football. Like, I need to know what – surely you've thought about what your day is going to look like and how you're planning ahead for this.
Man, I really haven't. We told you earlier, a Mississippi State offensive lineman had entered the transfer portal. In less than a week, two quarterbacks on that roster, Cole, have entered the transfer portal. More bad news coming from Starkville. It appears Kylan Hill, who was just suspended for the most recent game, has decided to leave the program and get ready for the NFL draft. And you think about a guy that initially was not going to stay, then he decided he was going to come back after Mike Leach was announced. You know how vital he could be in a Mike Leach offense. But Kylan Hill, kind of disappointing. I mean, fun player to watch. Looks like he's played his last game there in Starkville, Mississippi.
Yeah, this is getting a little out of hand here. If you're talking about just the roster management that Mississippi State's currently dealing with, you've got senior running back Kareem Walker, Michigan transfer that's left the team. Freshman offensive lineman Nick Pinley has entered the portal. Redshirt sophomore quarterback Jalen Maiden has entered the portal. We mentioned quarterback / wide receiver Garrett Schrader has entered the portal. One catch for 8 yards this year. So, I mean, production, not a lot of these guys have produced a ton until you get to the bottom of the list, which is running back Kylan Hill, who now appears as though, after being suspended last game, has decided that he's just going to go prepare for the NFL draft. And potentially he's played his last game in Starkville. 38 touches on the season, 23 of those coming via reception, 15 of those coming on the ground. He leads the team in touches. And that's without playing last week. And from what I saw on the sideline in Lexington, removing himself from the game multiple times against Kentucky. So it doesn't surprise me seeing the body language, talking to some other people around the program when we had him a few weeks ago. If you remember on the show, I told you guys that as more of these teams start to lose, more guys are going to start opting out. And
sure.
He was one of the guys that I had just seen personally and been told some things about that may potentially not finish this season. You hate it for him that it went this way, because he made a pretty big impact in the offseason, and you thought he was going to have – I mean, I thought he was the best running back in the league coming into the season. He obviously has not been that this year. I think Najee has easily been that. But he's got a second-round grade. I thought he could have worked himself into maybe a discussion at the bottom of the first, because – he is so dynamic in space and does catch the ball well. And if you're talking about a guy that could have put up I don't know, 50, 60, 70 receptions on the year. Now, all of a sudden, NFL teams would have said, woo, yeah, we need that guy. I mean, you're talking about a Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You're talking about an Alvin Kamara type of a back that can just really do damage outside of the backfield. And that type of a running back has become very valuable in the NFL. This also, on the back of the offseason, where defensive back Jerrion Jones went to Florida State, defensive tackle Fabian Lovett went to Florida State, quarterback Keaton Thompson went to Virginia, offensive lineman Stuart Reese went to Florida, and Javarius Selman, Brevin Jones, offensive lineman, went to Jackson State in Illinois. I mean, the roster has shrunk significantly since Mike Leach arrived in Starkville. This is, listen, new coach, new scheme, new personality, new ways of doing things. It's going to happen. Guys are going to butt heads. Guys aren't going to be happy. Guys that played won't be as good a fit, won't get as much playing time. They're going to be disappointed. Some of it is not surprising. Some of it is alarming. You have two scholarship quarterbacks on your roster heading in to play Alabama this weekend.
And one of the most highest rated prospects that you've had as far as a pro style quarterback in Maiden.
So I mean it's just
2018 signee. I think it begs the question, Cole. And even fair or unfair, people are going to start looking and saying, is Mike Leach, is he losing control of this team? Is he losing control of this program? When things start going south, people start looking for answers and explanations and people to blame. Or is it just a case of Mike Leach? He seems like he's very blunt. He doesn't sugarcoat things. Him telling those guys, hit the bricks.
Yeah, I don't feel like Mike Leach plays a lot of the games. And I could see where Mike Leach's personality doesn't necessarily work with some guys. I mean, a lot of coaches know how to play the game, whether it's how to convince them to stay, why they need to be there, and they can at least, you know, without going overboard, can sort of pat them on the rear end enough to make them think that it's not a good idea to leave. I could see Mike Leach just turning around and walking away or saying something that was totally irrelevant, and then the guy just doesn't want to be a part of it. So, but make no mistakes, a lot of this is scheme and system and just a lack of fit. And a lot of these guys just don't fit with what he wants to do. Garrett Schrader's a perfect example of that. Garrett Schrader wants to play quarterback. Well, he's not a great air raid quarterback. I mean, he's a guy that needs to utilize his legs, his toughness, his physicality. You know, he's not someone that's going to sit there and pick you apart with accuracy. It's not his game. So some of this, you know, I mean, I think Keaton Thompson in the offseason, we probably figured once you brought in Costello, he probably was like, listen, I've tried this enough. Like, let me try to get somewhere where I can at least get a shot. So some of them make sense, but when they begin to pile up and now in the middle of the season, you have your best player just say, yeah, no thanks, I'm out. Then you just wonder what that locker room is really like, what the mentality of the team is like. And my assumption would be that it's not very good.
This is the worst thing I've seen.
Been in quarantine, and like I need to get out and party. Woo! What's better than beach and a few drinks and Jeeps? Man, can't get any better than that. Law enforcement has definitely made their visibility and made people chill out and not be as crazy. The cops are doing their job as long as they don't be mean to people who are actually being innocent. Then I'm all gravy, baby.
On the worst thing that we had seen a couple months ago. And it has come to fruition. There are crews in Washington State that are working to destroy the first Asian giant hornet nest that has been found stateside.
Uh-oh.
The murder hornets were first spotted in Washington late last year. Entomologists have since been on alert for the massive insects, which can devastate honeybee populations. Don't tell Father of Magwise that. He will get mad. After weeks of trapping and searching, Washington State Department of Agriculture entomologists located what they said is the first nest of its kind in the United States. And they found it in Blaine, north of Seattle, near the Canadian border. The nest was found after four live hornets were caught this week in traps in the agriculture department set up in the area. Entomologists were able to attach, follow me here, radio trackers to three of the hornets?
What?
And one of them led them to the nest, located in the cavity of a tree on private property. The team observed dozens of hornets entering and leaving the tree. Now, they typically nest in the ground, so the discovery of the nest 8 feet up in the cavity of a tree was unexpected. And the agency's managing entomologist, Sven Spetsker, said during a press briefing Friday afternoon that the location of the nest did come as a surprise to he and his coworkers. Property owner gave the agency permission to eradicate the nest. Smart.
Yeah.
And the agency was unable to eliminate the nest Friday due to bad weather. Plan to try again the next day using... Anyone? Anyone? Take a guess?
Fire.
John?
I will go honey.
Mm, vacuum.
Vacuum.
That's how Billy the Exterminator did it, with the shop vac.
Now, Saturday, the agency did update, say that the removal, quote, appears to have been successful. Sounds like there's even some room for error there. Numerous specimens were vacuumed out of the nest.
One problem with this, Cole. Guys, I'm reading this story. The queen was not located, though she was expected to be inside the nest.
I
gotta know where that queen is.
Appeared to be eradicated. The tree's gonna be cut down to remove newborn hornets and see if any queens have left the nest. Mr. Spitzker had said Friday that they expected to extract anywhere from 100 to 200 hornets from the tree based on finding from thermal cameras. So let me get this straight. We got a radio device that we can put on a bug to take us to a nest. Thermal cameras to find out how many bugs are in tree.
That's actually genius, though, to put the radio on the hornet, following back to the nest. Until I'm worried if I'm that property owner, though.
Until it stings you, and then...
Yeah.
That ain't
well, if I'm that owner of that property, hey, guys, I'll put you up. Need you to search the rest of the property. How many of these nests do I have? Murder hornets.
They say you should be cautiously optimistic that we're still only talking about Whatcom County at this point.
Yeah. It starts in one county, though. They're going to be all over the place. We're not going to be talking about COVID in 5 months. We're going to be inside of our house.
Murder hornet invasion?
Well, we're going to be inside of our houses. We can't go outside. We've got murder hornets everywhere.
Fortunate thing.
Go buy a tennis racket.
About these insects is that Murder Hornet would be a great mascot name.
For a minor league team?
The Spokane Murder Hornets?
Yeah. I agree. It would be solid. Or Whatcom County Murder Hornets?
Do we know how much worse the sting is from a murder hornet?
They just say that it's much worse.
Murder's in his name.
Much
murder's
more
the case
painful
they gave me.
Than that of a typical bee or wasp. People are advised not to remove or eradicate nests themselves. By the way, I'm just going to tell you, I see a nest of murder hornets in my front yard, we're taking them out. I'm not waiting on Mr. Spinker to come help me out. I'm not waiting on you to bring your Dyson vacuum over here so you can keep them and see them. They're going down.
Arkansas, based on just the way that they've played and been one of those surprise teams, throw out the record, how they played in each game. They take on Texas A&M. They're in College Station, 6:30. That's on the SEC Network. And Missouri at Florida, that's a 6:30 game, which is surprising to me, on the SEC alternate channel. That game could be really, really interesting when you think about Florida not being able to practice and then what Missouri, the level that they've been playing at and getting better every single week. this is a scary game for Florida. And I'll ask this question. In your opinion, who's the most likely to pull the upset? Is it Arkansas at Texas A&M or Missouri at Florida?
Right now I would probably go Missouri at Florida. I think that, number one, we hadn't seen this Florida team in a little while. We don't know exactly what they are. And I think that's obviously a little bit of a concern. I think you look at this Missouri team sort of finding themselves, improving a little bit, getting better. And you got a young quarterback that you know is going to grow across the course of a season. So that gives you a little bit more confidence. And let's be honest, we know Missouri can score. I mean, we know that Missouri is a team that has the capability to put up points. And now that they have a run game, on top of the fact that they're going to be able to go out and utilize a quarterback that can help stretch the field, I mean, that makes them extremely dangerous, in my opinion. So the problem with the Arkansas A&M game is that I think A&M will be just fine playing Arkansas style of game. I think they'll be okay doing it. And I don't think it's a big issue. I think if they want to slow it down, Jimbo will be fine with it. I think all of them will be fine with it. And they'll just say, you know what? We can play ground and pound. We can run the ball. We can run clock. We're confident enough in our defense to be able to get a couple of stops. And you know, we'll go do that. So for me, I don't even really think it's debatable. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that I never feel great about these teams with these long layoffs coming back and just looking sharp, looking really good. So I would question that maybe more than anything else.
How much does that affect Florida, just from a former player standpoint? Not practicing for 2 weeks. You've been practicing, you're in your routine, and then not being able to practice and having to shut it down.
Yeah, I think it's big, man. I think and it's kind of like what we just talked about with Graham Mertz. I mean, there is a – and I'm trying to find more information on this during the breaks because I don't really know exactly how it's going to work. But you think about being gone. There's a 7-day return to play protocol inside all of these Big Ten protocols. So I'm assuming that means that you have to be back with your team for 7 days before you participate in a game. I don't know 100%, but I mean, I'm assuming that that's the way that it would work. But to not be around your teammates, to not practice together, to not be in the same place. I mean, that in and of itself, Landrum, would be a problem. And I think would probably be something that, you know, would just not really allow you to feel like you were on the same page. The continuity and the chemistry definitely wouldn't be there. So it would be really difficult, man. It would be tough. And I mean, think about the physicality of it. And that was my concern with Graham Mertz. Like, how safe is it for a guy to be gone for 21 days, not put a helmet on, not put shoulder pads on, have no contact, and then all of a sudden come back for a Monday practice and play on Saturday?
Yeah.
That doesn't feel safe to me. So
no.
It's going to be problematic in both instances. So I lack confidence in a team that's essentially been gone for a month or almost a month. It's just and I'm interested to see what they look like. And we've seen some other teams do it that have come back and look pretty good. But, man, not that long.
Interesting, Cole. He was asked to comment on the officiating. And to paraphrase the question, it was, there are some people that believe that you've basically been gifted 2 wins by the SEC officials and that you don't deserve to be 3-2. What is he supposed to respond? How is he supposed to respond to that?
I understand that some people feel like that question has to come out, that question has to happen. I don't know. And there are certain people that are just looking for a soundbite. They're hoping that a guy slips up. He is definitely not the one that's going to. I think we know how Gus has handled the media and handled himself in the media. He's not one that's going to really step out and give you a soundbite that is going to be inflammatory or can be used against him, or people can use that are going to be able to motivate their team. Just not something he's going to do. I don't know. I don't know, Landrum. I don't know what you want there. I mean, is he going to say, yeah, you appreciate you guys handing us that win and really, really sticking it to Ole Miss. Good job. He didn't see it on the field. I mean, if you think he got a good close look at whether or not it barely nicked a finger of his return man? I mean, I know you go back and you say he's probably seen it since then and you just want his opinion on that, but I don't know. I had multiple people. I mean, I'll just share this with you, and people via social can, I mean, you could chime in and let me know what you think. I would be interested to see what people think about this. I had multiple people call me out after the game, essentially, you know, tell me that I was a fraud for not asking Gus Malzahn about that particular play after our game Saturday. Now, I don't know what, number one, what do you want the question to be? Where do you want me to go with that? Are you just looking for a soundbite? I mean, if you're just hoping that a guy might say something that will be replayed over and over, I can see you risking that. But when you get 2-3 questions with somebody and you know he's not the guy that's going to give you that, why are you wasting your time?
Right.
Dave Hastie, at Dave Hastie, H-A-S-T-E-Y, he tweeted, at Cole Kublik towed the at Auburn football family line by refusing to ask Malzahn how the ref saved his at $$ again this season. But it's what was expected.
It's a conspiracy.
Whose
right?
account is $$$? That's a weird Twitter handle.
And also, John Perdue at John Perdue, P-E-R-D-U-E, not spelled like the university. He tweeted after the game, at Cole Kublik, you are a complete fraud for not asking Gus about the non-reviewed kickoff touch. The first thing that John made a mistake was is that it was reviewed. It was looked at. Ole Miss recovery. But then again, what should we expect from an Auburn alum? Hashtag fraud. I mean, do you believe that I was operating in a fraudulent manner by not asking a coach about a play that went his way?
One
that he may not even have had the opportunity to take a closer look at and see as to how it actually played out.
Here's the thing. Even if it was for the people that are saying, oh, they, you know, and I'm not toting the water for anybody, but I'm saying if you slow it down and you do like I did last night, look at all of these angles, and I only have some of the angles I'm guessing that they do in Birmingham. Is that conclusive? There's no way that you can overturn that. There's absolutely no way. Now, if the referee had called it a fumble on the field, I think you could make the case that you'd have a hard time overturning it and saying that he didn't touch it. If the referee indeed thought that he saw that. But just to assume, if they go there and they look at it for 15 minutes, that you were going to get an Ole Miss possession or it's going to be Ole Miss football, I think it's silly. Because, I mean, how many people are still out there and are absolutely convinced? Now, if you want to be convinced, and if you wanted it to happen, and you buy into that, I can see where you look at that. I mean, you said that you saw the thumb move from Sean Shivers. My whole thing is, was it a graze? Was it an actual fumble? The trajectory of the ball never changed. I don't know how
you did see
that.
The finger move. Do I believe that they should have taken a longer look at it and stopped the game? Yes, I do. I think they should have looked at it longer. Because I think if you give yourself more time, then you're going to have, I don't know how many different vantage points you're going to have because camera angles are going to be limited this year. It's just what it's going to be. But, you know, I think they should have taken a longer look at it. We'll go to the three-man front Twitter feed. As always, brought to you by your friends at Royal Buick GMC. You can visit them online at royalautomotive.net. Royal Payne tweets in, always tell everyone who screenshots all the calls where the ref was, quote, cheating for Bama to go chart all the plays for both teams and talk about all potential holding, pass interference, fumbles, etc. against both teams. People always have tunnel vision. Daniel at DXMAS1225 tweets in at the number 3-man front. How's that different from your interview with Tom Herman? You knew how that would go too. I mean, actually, based on the information that I had during that interview, I didn't expect that he would be that pissed off about it. And I actually felt like the strategic question of how did you instruct your agent to handle that situation was one that he wasn't ready to answer, but. Maybe it's not different. I don't know. Maybe Daniel's right. Golden Voice of the South tweets in, Echo Kubik at the number three man front. People can't go let go of the fact Cole played for Auburn. He's got his degree from there, but he has a job to do as a reporter to stay impartial. That's coming from a Bama fan grad. Keep up the good work. Kevin Roper tweets, Cole's not a fraud. He's all right for a burner.
Our buddy Ben Leard joining us, former Auburn quarterback. Last time we talked to him, it was Georgia week for the Bulldogs, and the Tigers did not go well for Auburn, but it's still entertaining. Ben, have you ever seen a murder hornet?
I don't know that I've ever seen one. I think I have heard of them, maybe seen a picture or two. I've never experienced the sting of a murder hornet, though.
What's the worst you've ever been stung by an insect or multiple insects? And what was the insect?
It would be a yellow jacket. I think it was maybe in the summertime, early spring, whatnot, messed around with the wrong bush out in the yard, and had a nest of yellow jackets in it, and they popped me a pretty good bit, you know, because Landrum, you know me, heck, man, we've done a lot of stuff back in the day. You know, I'm not very fast, so they got me a lot before I was able to make it into the water.
Yeah, and here's the tip: if you go underwater, don't come up from where you went in, because they're sitting there.
Oh, they're smart. Yeah, they're smart. They're really smart.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way, of course. We got college football coming up, obviously, this weekend. We're talking about Auburn and LSU. When you look at Auburn, what they were able to do with Bo Nix last week, some of the design plays, running them outside the pocket, Tank Bigsby continues to be huge for Auburn in the running game. What did you see that would be encouraging or positive news for Auburn fans moving forward?
You know, Landrum, a couple of things. Well, really, I saw a lot of positive stuff come out of their trip to Oxford. One, it was a road win in the SEC, which Auburn, unfortunately, thus far up into the season, had really struggled, obviously, in Athens and very much struggled in Columbia prior to that. So winning in Oxford was a huge step. The other positives I saw, with the exception of the loss of Council, who I think is probably Auburn's most versatile offensive lineman at that point, the offensive line is establishing a little bit more continuity and consistency, and that's paramount for them to be able to run the football and protect Bo Nix in the passing game. But to me, the two brightest spots that I saw is in this it's nothing anybody else can't pick it out, but number four is special. I mean, Tank Bigsby is – he's a kid that they need to get him at least 20 to 25 touches a game, I believe, whether he's carrying the football in the running game or catching balls out of the backfield. He is a special football player, and they need to maximize the opportunity for him to touch the ball as often as possible. And then lastly, it felt as if Chad Morris did a better job keeping Bo engaged and keeping him in the moment and in the game itself, and him, you know, you didn't see Bo try and have the high school heroics, hurdling a guy, trying to run over a guy, or he might have could done it Pennsylvania, but he's not done the SEC. I think they may have rectified that up in the last couple of weeks, and hopefully that remains the case.
Ben, I'm interested. I watched, obviously, game on the sideline Saturday, and it felt like Chad Morris said to himself, okay, if you're going to run around, if you want to use your legs, then that's fine. Let's design something that'll help all of us here, make it more beneficial for our team, for you, and just kind of go with it. And it helped Bo Nix get involved in that game, maybe be more comfortable in that game. What else did you see them maybe change to allow him to be more successful, or allow maybe him to be a little bit more comfortable in that offense?
Well, and Cole, I think what you just addressed to me was the number one thing that stuck out, is that, okay, you've got a kid that at times he has shown the propensity to run the football quickly, you know, really evade the rush or try to evade the rush. And I've heard you talk about it, and you and I have both talked about it. He creates his own pressure at times. And might elude the wrong way or whatnot, or you know, and just create more hurdles than necessary. So I think what Coach, what Chad Morris did is he used that to his advantage and saying, I know I've got a kid that is eager to run the ball. Let's at least prepare for him to do so. Because 9 times out of 10, before this past weekend's game, he was in a scramble situation, and you had often, you didn't have anyone on predetermined blocks or trying to get leverage, hat on a hat kind of thing. So now with predetermined run calls, you've at least putting yourself in an advantageous situation. So, but the other thing, I think they did a good job of really getting him into a rhythm in the passing game. Not every pass has to be a screen, but at the same time, not every pass needs to be a screen either. Throw the ball in slants, outs, stick it post, digs, things of that nature are huge. And in order for Bo, it seems to me that Bo is a feel type guy, that as long, if he can feel himself getting into a rhythm, as long as he feels that there is success and positivity coming, I think that really portrays itself for him for the remainder of the game, and can be conversely the way also, that if things start to go downhill, you can see Bo press a little bit, and that turns to be a disadvantage as well.
All right, Ben, it's early in the week. We got about 30 seconds, but the way that you see Auburn winning this game inside Jordan here against LSU?
They're going to have to play better pass defense, hands down. Better pass defense, and they've got to find a way to establish a rush and not fabricate pressure. They've got to get pressure with the front four, which would be much easier said than done. But LSU can score points. That is hands down. They found that with Finley, Miles Brennan. If he's healthy, he'll be able to score points no matter what. But to win, Auburn's going to have to run the football and do so aggressively and do so consistently, and maybe rely on Auburn to get a big ball, a big play through the air, through play action pass.
Sure.
And don't turn the ball over, for sure.
3-Man Front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, JocksFM.com, and the Jocks mobile app.